And that's the kicky music that means it's time again for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. This week's show will take you both backwards and forwards. First, we're going to talk about famous characters that have been reinvented from their past selves and some of our favorite versions of some of our favorite characters. Then we'll look ahead to this summer's new television shows, and I will try to stump the guys with a little quiz. We like to do that sometimes. And finally, as always, we'll tell you what's making us happy this week. Before we get started, let's go around the table. Stephen Thompson, what do you do at NPR?
I am a writer and editor with NPR Music.
And Trey Graham, what do you do at NPR?
I'm the movies editor for the website.
Tragically, we are without Glenn Weldon this week as he is on vacation following the successful completion of the draft of his book.
Yay! Yay!
Fortunately for us, we are joined by our esteemed producer, Mike Katzef. Other than producing Pop Culture Happy Hour that you do so well, what else do you do at NPR?
I'm a producer for Alt Latino occasionally, and I produce and film the Tiny Desk concerts and write for the website and all sorts of stuff.
Towering, towering collection of achievements.
Mm-hmm.
If you like it on the website...
Four achievements.
If you like it on the website, Mike Katzef
more than
probably
three
has a role. Yep. Well, our first topic this week comes from our Facebook page, from our follower, Hannah Chismar.
Yes.
We always appreciate it, by the way, when you do provide us with topics, because every once in a while, we can't think of any. At any rate, Hannah suggested, in the wake of the latest series of Sherlock, that we talk about endlessly recreated characters. Now, we talked earlier this spring, after a little dust-up over Watchmen, about rebooted characters and sort of why some are able to be rebooted without controversy and some cause enormous controversy, as you may know. But this time we thought we would talk about some specific favorites and iterations that work for us and don't work for us. So, Stephen, can you think of any examples of a character you have seen reinvented?
Well, the first thing that came to my mind is the idea of malleability and the way that the sort of character that can be recast and recast and recast in endless iterations, and one of the keys being that they don't have a distinct face.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a character that you can bring back again and again and again in a million different iterations is one that, while there are certainly physical indications that they are the character they are, they're faceless.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one that kind of popped into my head was Robin Hood.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of, as much as there are all these, you know, sort of shorthands for him, you know, steals from the rich, gives to the poor, mm-hmm. you know, kind of medieval times, you know, his merry men, you know.
Little green hat.
Little green hat and, and whatnot. Robin Hood really is an idea. You can sort of shoehorn Robin Hood into sort of any given era, politically and socially, and it's sort of no surprise that Robin Hood is kind of constantly, constantly
re-imagined.
Being rebooted. When mm-hmm. I was doing a little bit of poking around, you know, before we were going to talk about this, I had completely forgotten that there was a Russell Crowe.
There was,
Robin Hood,
yeah.
2 years ago.
Yeah, Russell
that made $100 million.
Kevin Costner.
And of course, you got Robin Hood, Prince of... No, I always want to say Robin Hood, Prince of Tides.
That's a more sensitive movie.
Yes, it's bathed
more
in...
More Robin Hood in therapy.
Right, Robin Hood is sort of bathed in an orange glow in Robin Hood, Prince of Tides.
Embracing Barbara Streisand.
And exactly. Made Marian with a really perfect set of nails.
Yes,
exactly. So you know, and there have been several animated versions of Robin
Daffy
Hood.
Daffy Duck.
Daffy Duck. To me, the prototypical perfect Robin Hood is Daffy Duck.
I knew you were going to say Daffy Duck.
Not Men in Tights?
I was going to say Men in Tights is my favorite.
Well, what's funny is at least when I know how they kind of customize Google to your own tendencies.
Mm-hmm.
When I start typing in Robin Hood, the first thing that shows up is Robin Hood, Men in Tights.
Oh.
But,
that's because you type in Men in Tights a lot.
Right.
Not
yeah.
funny.
I think I just got served.
That's a good one to kick off with, because it is one that's had many, many, many different iterations.
And I think in general, it really helps if people expect it to be rebooted and they know the face is going to change.
That's another place that you get with a character like James Bond.
I was just about to say James Bond, but I didn't want to steal it from somebody else.
Where although people will definitely have a preference of one James Bond over another, they are definitely happy to sort of, not necessarily happy. I mean, if you like a particular one, you don't like it when they go on to the next one. But they're very accustomed to having that character be played by different guys.
Well, and to take that to its extreme, Doctor Who.
Right.
You know, where people know it's built into the DNA of the character that he's going to change.
So your prototypical Robin Hood, though, is Daffy Duck.
Daffy Duck.
That's your favorite. And you said
by far.
And you said, Mike, that Men in Tights is your favorite.
Yeah, but that's also a spoof of the Kevin
right.
Costner one. I mean,
right.
it's mostly pulling from that. But,
yeah.
you know, it's Mel Brooks.
Do you have a favorite Robin Hood, Trey?
I don't know that I do. Maybe the little fox from the
Disney
thing.
Nice. Excellent. Very, very good. Well, Trey Graham, can you think of a character of which you have a favorite version?
This was something that it took me a while to get my head around what the question was, because characters
because
being
we weren't at all
rebooted.
Clear about what the question
no,
was.
No, you know what? I blame Hannah Chismar.
True. No,
yeah,
because
Hannah.
what I do a lot of the time is theater criticism. So it's built into that, right?
It's never the
same. I've seen 100 Hamlets, probably.
Right.
Not quite that many, but I've probably seen Hamlet 25 times now. The great stories and the great heroes and the great anti-heroes are sort of engineered to be rebooted in that way, to be reinterpreted and reframed.
If there is something that originates in theater and then it's made into a movie, one of the things that can happen is it kind of freezes that character for many, many, many people as that movie portrayal of that person, even if otherwise they would know lots of versions of it.
Not for the real theater aficionados, but for a mainstream audience.
But especially like
well,
when
like
you're
War Horse, for example. Now you just picture that one brown horse.
But especially, for example, if you're a kid and you're growing up watching a movie, the reason why I mention this is I was actually thinking about different characters that I really have seen in different ways. One of the things that occurred to me was that when I was a kid growing up, I watched Oklahoma a lot, the movie, not the show. If you have seen Oklahoma, the movie, you know that Shirley Jones, who I think, you know, was really talented, did some really, was better in Carousel, did other better stuff, but her Lori in Oklahoma is very childlike and very, very young. Feels very sort of fake feisty, but not necessarily like real feisty.
Mm-hmm.
Later in life, when I was in love with Hugh Jackman, we're very close.
Later in life sort of
he
implies
speaks highly
that
you're, of you.
You're just in the twilight.
Right,
of your,
exactly. I'm in my twilight years. Later in life, when I was in love with Hugh Jackman, I acquired on DVD the version of that he did.
Yep.
If you've seen this, you know the Lori in that show is completely different. It's like a different person.
Sure.
The same lines, the same songs, but everything is different. She is much more an equal. She's much more a tomboy.
Mm-hmm.
She's much more sort of believably someone who works on a farm, on a working farm as a person who helps it run.
In frontier territory.
Absolutely.
Right?
And so what you get from that is much less a guy who's sort of falling for this kind of little girl almost, and much more of a genuine kind of battle of wits between these very stubborn people. And it's a completely different idea, and I liked it much better as a story. I found it much more effective. And there are certain songs where the feel of the same song with the same lines sung by the same people will say We're in Love being the main one. The vibe could not be more different because in the movie, it comes off as very kind of sincere and just barely playful.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in that filmed version of the Hugh Jackman one, it is strictly playing with each other.
Foolery.
Giving each other hell.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Well, and I think you bring up an interesting point about, you know, which of these characters work better in what ways. You know, I think that another factor besides the sort of the malleability of faces is the malleability of characters.
Right.
And anytime you can really bring out like dramatic differences within the idea. I mean, you coming back to Robin Hood, I mean, it doesn't have to even be set in medieval times.
Right. No, of course not.
Does the ephemeral nature of theater make it more difficult to come up with a more definitive version? As a critic, if you've seen that many versions of Hamlet, for instance, how can you tell and how do you judge who has a better performance? Is it the better reading, the better interpretation?
Especially since with Hamlet, you're dealing with a fairly set script most of the time.
Right.
Well, the number of edits I have seen of Hamlet is probably all equal to the
but
number
it's
of productions.
The source material is the same.
Well, I don't think there is a definitive performance or interpretation.
There's not a definitive Hamlet.
Of a real classic.
So it's always sort of fluid.
There are so many ways to come at that play. It can be about Gertrude more than it can be about Claudius. It can be about Claudius more than it can be about Hamlet. It can be more about Ophelia going crazy, and it can be about the reasons Ophelia goes crazy. I saw a production probably 4 years ago, 3 years ago, that managed to suggest with a gesture, a silent gesture on the actress's part, that Ophelia was pregnant and knew it before her suicide, and that's tied up with why she kills herself. Spoiler alert.
What's sort of interesting to me about a piece of theater where there's many, many versions of basically the same script, just highlighting certain different things, is that it's still locked into more or less the same story.
Source material. Whereas
like a James Bond or even Robin Hood, it can be, or a Sherlock, for instance, it can be...
They'll rewrite the script.
They'll not only rewrite the script, but it's basically just a series of short stories over and over and over again. They're telling a different version of that character by telling a different story.
Well, take a character like Dracula. You know, Dracula is it's basically vampire. Beyond that, you can really make Dracula just about whatever you want.
Right.
You know, from your you know, Bram Stoker's Dracula with Gary Oldman hamming it up, all the way over to Dracula Dead and Loving It, if we can continue the Mel Brooks vibe.
Oh my.
Yeah, and you know, by the time you hear this podcast, the review will be up that I saw Snow White and the Huntsman this week. And it's not very good. I was disappointed in it. I was hoping for something a little more interesting.
Cool.
Yeah, I was hoping for something a little more interesting. That's not it. If you see this movie after seeing, as I did, Mirror Mirror, which was the earlier one this year with Julia Roberts.
Which you liked more than a lot of people.
I did like it more than a lot of people.
Is that more of a comedy, though?
Yeah,
too?
Yeah.
Like, this is kind of like an epic, crazy,
that's
violent,
the light reading. This is the dark reading.
Yeah.
And one of the things I thought was interesting was that the Mirror Mirror put much less weight on that story. They tried less to make it a big, epic, heavy, important story and played more with the pieces of the trope of Snow White.
Mm-hmm.
The pieces of the mirror, the reading of the mirror is more playful. It sort of is more playing with the pieces that everybody knows of this character. And I think you wind up with the same thing. Like, for example, when you mentioned Sherlock, there are certain pieces of Sherlock that kind of everybody knows, and
right,
you can
like
push
the DNA of those.
And you can push those pieces around. And in fact, House was essentially a Sherlock story, and took a lot of those same pieces and moved them around: the addiction, the best friend, the sort of mystery solving.
But to come back to Snow White, this newer version is more about the story. It's more about making the story the focus, not the tropes.
It is, and as you,
but also with a grisly twist that you don't usually see with that character.
It's certainly a darker version of the fairy tale than the fairy tale movies we usually get. It's very true to the darkness of those fairy tales as they were originally collected, but not the way we typically see them in movies. So, Mike, did you have a character that you wanted to mention?
I mean, this is incredibly obvious. This summer, there's going to be another Spider-Man movie. Andrew Garfield is going to be playing Peter Parker this time. And it got me thinking how many versions of Spider-Man there have been over the years.
Yeah.
And here's a character that in his DNA is basically
spider.
Well, radioactive spider, actually. Oh. That was really funny. Within the Spider-Man DNA, there's the teenager who is trying to make ends meet. He has a family that he's trying to protect, and he's trying to do right. You know, within, you know, his mantra obviously is, with great power comes great responsibility. That's all there really is to Spider-Man, plus a rogues gallery of villains that he can play off of. And so it got me thinking about how many different times we basically see the same origin of this character in the Sam Raimi movies. Before that, there have been countless cartoons. I counted, actually. I looked this up.
There was an Atari cartoon.
I had to look this up because I was actually floored. So the first cartoon I ever saw of Spider-Man was actually this Fox cartoon that aired in the 90s. But there was a Spider-Man cartoon that went from 67 to 70. There was another one from 81 to 83, which was Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. There was the Fox cartoon that went from 94 to 98.
It was also part of what, Electric Company? Do you know what I'm talking about? They had Spider-Man cartoons Electric. I think
Electric
on Electric Company.
I think that was the live action thing, maybe.
Yes, it was. It was a goofy kind of live action. I remember.
Yeah.
As soon as you said live action,
I had never seen
like,
that, but I read about it.
Yeah, it is.
No memory of this.
There was, and then here are basically four newer Spider-Man cartoons that have basically come out since 2000s. There was one from 99 to 2000. Spider-Man Unlimited. There was Spider-Man, the new animated series, Spectacular Spider-Man, and now an Ultimate Spider-Man.
Diet Spider-Man.
There's Diet Spider-Man.
Spider-Man with lemon.
So what strikes
Spider-Man
me is
Spider-Man Extreme.
They keep trying to retell the same origin over and over again, reintroduce him as a high schooler, as a college student. In the comics, he's been a school teacher. He's, you know, had jobs as a research assistant.
Kid, not a kid.
Married, not married. Yeah. I mean, there was a big deal when they unmarried him, but it was a big deal when they married him. So he's an Avenger. He's part of the Fantastic Four. Like, there's so many different iterations of this, even in the comic book series alone. And there's that Ultimate version, which is now, they killed off Peter Parker and they introduced another Spider-Man, Miles Morales, which is the African-American Spider-Man.
Right.
But at the core of all these different versions is still that same person trying to juggle all these real life things with the superheroes.
Do you have a favorite?
You know, it's sort of an amalgamation, I think, of several. Like, I remember really liking the cartoon when I was a kid, around the same time that Batman animated series was on, that like is really famous and whatever. So they kind of put them back to back, and that kind of got me into comics in the first place. But that first Sam Raimi movie is actually really, really awesome.
Oh, I think the first two are really good.
The first two are really, really good. But what's sort of frustrating, I think, about them reintroducing it is they keep kind of starting from ground zero over and over again. And sometimes I wish they could just pick up and just have more stories. How many times can they show, you know, reintroduce all the same characters again and how he becomes Spider-Man?
Right.
It does seem like we see the origin story for Spider-Man over and over again. And it's one thing that seems really odd to me about The Amazing Spider-Man, which is coming out in July, is that just going to be the same damn origin story?
I don't know if it is, though.
I am hoping that we will see it over the opening credits in about a minute and a half.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, one thing that really jumps out to me about this movie is just, and I'm sure it's what a lot of people think, is it just didn't Spider-Man 3... Didn't this franchise just exist in a different way?
Yeah.
They're rebooting it very, very quickly.
It's like
next year there being a Harry Potter origin story.
I think the difference is that's sort of built on the idea that, you know, even in the comics, they are constantly, a new writer comes on, he kind of takes what he likes and goes with it. Another writer comes on. There's three or four different Spider-Man books at any one time, too.
Yeah.
I know,
so if they just sort of jump in and just say, here's another Spider-Man story, It might exist in the world that you already know from the other movies. It might not. Who really cares? It's just Spider-Man.
It's like if they reboot Alvin and the Chipmunks. It's just going to be like,
One of the things I'm actually really psyched about this movie is that I really like Andrew Garfield. And Andrew Garfield really loves Spider-Man. And did that lovely thing at Comic-Con where he stood up and talked about how much he loved Spider-Man, got up in the suit, and they didn't actually know it was him, and then he took the head off the suit. But I was just reading recently about how when he had auditioned for this, he sent the director a photo of himself when he was like 3, dressed as Spider-Man. He is for real. And when you hear him talk about it, for him, it's like, I sort of can't believe that I'm playing Spider-Man. It would be like, you know, it would be like if somebody hired Steven to play Eve Barsley in a movie. It's like, I kind of can't believe I'm playing this character. I'm kind of interested to see where they kind of go with this, you know, really interesting actor to me who is super, super invested in trying to make it a great movie.
I think he's the most relatable of all the superheroes because of all the flaws and foibles and sense of weight that he always puts on himself.
He's also poor and stays poor.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they always sort of make him struggling to make ends meet and with dating and with taking care of his aunt, who's always sick for some reason.
Jeez, God.
Get a healthcare plan.
And, you know, I associate Spider-Man so much with operating at night that I think that's one of the things I also always think makes it a little bit more relatable to me, that if you really were... I mean, Batman, too, but if you really were, like, a superhero, you would probably not go out running around during the day, like, in your costume as Superman does.
Unless you're Iron Man, but otherwise...
But, like, it always seemed a little bit easier for me to believe, quote-unquote, that you would take on this kind of identity and you would go out and really cover yourself up and...
Well, I think another thing about Spider-Man, sort of playing off the part where he's poor, or at least, you know, kind of working class, is... The Spider-Man movies and the various iterations of Spider-Man are not just another bunch of gadget porn.
Yeah.
You know, and I think as much as, you know, the Batman movies are really good, as much as Iron Man is really good, as much as The Avengers is really good, there's a lot of just this sort of let's watch CGI machine swirring and whoa, you know, James Bond, where it's like, here's a knife that comes out of your shoe. It's much more
good British accent.
it's a little bit of a grittier story, and I think that's one reason it's more relatable.
Well, it's just definitely grounded, and I think a lot of kids relate to it. Maybe that's why they keep retelling it over and over again. It's like every new generation can kind of relate to this kind of nerdy person who steps up to the plate, I guess.
Yeah.
The end. Spider-Man.
Spider-Man.
It's a thing.
It's a thing. I will say one more thing before we depart, which is one of the bummers is that when they redo a story, like if they make a new iteration of Spider-Man, you can't take like this part of this one and this part of this one. Because I was saying to somebody today, I've seen a couple of Pride and Prejudices, right?
Right.
And I love Colin Firth, right? Colin Firth is my A1 mm-hmm. Darcy. And as much as I love Jennifer Ely, and I'm not trying to start a fist fight.
I'm so glad I sit in between you.
You should see the look on Trey's face. It's like I'm trying to suck his intestines out through his mouth. I do love her. But I also really like Keira Knightley, surprisingly enough, in the one that Keira Knightley was in. And because I really loved sort of the wink she has in the way that she plays that part.
Mm-hmm.
There's a real, like, genuine lightness and spirit that I really responded to when I saw that movie. The guy, a little less.
It was the guy Jeremy Northam in that one?
No. You're thinking of Emma.
I'm thinking of Emma.
Which I also love.
Yes.
Jeremy Northam can be in anything. That's fine.
Sometimes I do wish about mixing and matching. Sometimes you wish, man, if they could only take the production values of this one and insert this actor from a previous thing
Absolutely.
And drop it in there.
Absolutely. So I'm not saying I don't love Jennifer Ely. I'm just saying I also love...
You might as well have just spat in her face.
In Trey's face.
We're sorry. We're sorry, Jennifer.
We're not sorry. We
She's
love
not
both.
Right.
Also... Pride and Prejudice and Spider-Man connection, Jennifer Ely.
Who?
Absolutely.
What?
Because her mom is Rosemary Harris.
Huh. How about that?
One to grow on.
Good trivia. All right. So if you want to tell us that we got these questions wrong, or if you want to bring up different characters entirely, find us on Facebook, as we said, at facebook.com/PCHH, or visit us at npr.org/PCHH. Now that we've chosen our favorite versions of some favorite characters, it's time to think about what characters might become our favorites in the future. That's right. It's summer. And that means there's going to be a lot of very strange television.
Mm.
I always like to expand our minds by using quizzes. So consider this your summer television test, which will involve each of you getting 3 questions.
Wrong.
And we'll see. And we'll see how you do. I have the quiz right here.
It's crinkly.
So we'll get underway. All right, Stephen Thompson.
All right.
Which is not a real episode of the new Oprah Winfrey Network series, Are You Normal America?
Oh, God.
That's the name of a show? Is that the part that's made up?
No. There really is a new show called Are You Normal America?
Okay. Which
one is not a real episode? Is it normal to have sex in public? Is it normal to pee in the shower? Is it normal to shave your back? Is it normal to have gone skinny dipping?
Oh, boy, three of those are so mundane. I mean, even back shaving, I guess, is mundane. They're all mundane.
Three of them are real.
I'm going to say back shaving.
You are correct.
Yes!
Well,
the other three seemed more,
very well done. Trey Graham, what is Randy to the Rescue? A show featuring American Idol host Randy Jackson, in which he intervenes to arrange music for events such as weddings and Sweet 16 parties at the last minute.
God, I wish that was real.
2, a show featuring Randy McKenna, a West Virginia reptile wrangler who removes dangerous reptiles from homes. 3, a show featuring Randy Velarde, a construction supervisor previously featured on Extreme Makeover Home Edition, who builds new bedrooms for children with terminal illnesses. Or 4, a show featuring Randy Finoli, a bridal consultant from Say Yes to the Dress, as he travels around to advise brides.
You did so much research.
All right. It is...
only one of those is real.
It is either the reptiles or the brides, right?
So often the case.
So there's a little Bridezilla joke in there somewhere. Mm-hmm. I don't have time to make it. Mm-hmm. I'm going with the reptiles.
You are wrong. It's the brides.
Which one was it?
The brides.
Oh.
What was the brides again?
Randy Finoli, bridal consultant from Say Yes to the Dress.
I'd already tuned out because I was sure it was reptiles.
Travels around. I did a good job. You have to admit the reptile one could be real.
I almost stopped you after reptiles.
Totally watched the reptiles.
The reptile. I was going to say, make that show. All right. My cat's a... Who stars in the Hallmark Channel TV movie Operation Cupcake?
Oh, my God.
Is it 1, Dean Cain and Christy Swanson? She was the original Buffy, you know. Mm-hmm. 2.
I like how you had to tell me in case I didn't know.
2, Candace Cameron Bure of Full House, you know, we all know. And Antonio Sabato Jr., once of General Hospital. Is it 3, Brian Austin Green and Melissa Joan Hart? Or is it 4, Courtney Thorne Smith and Matthew Modine? Operation Cupcake.
I'm going to go with C.
Brian Austin Green and Melissa Joan Hart. Mm-hmm. No, it is Dean Cain and Christy Swanson.
Wow. Way to go, See, it's almost a little too what can, to what more, B-list.
Yeah.
What
yeah.
more can you tell us about Operation Cupcake?
There is a great photo of Dean Cain dressed in military garb with a cupcake, which I will link
what
to.
What do they do?
I don't know. I forget.
See, the reason I picked that successfully was I sort of picked, like, which one of these movies would Linda Holmes most likely actually watch?
Shut up. Don't be prideful about television or we'll start talking about you. All right. Stephen Thompson, which of the following is a real sci-fi summer movie? Piranha Gator.
Oh, man.
Nice.
Piranha Conda.
Yes.
Oh, I want to see that.
Too. Piranhasaurus or Piranhazilla.
What was the first one again?
Piranha Gator.
I'm going to say Piranhazilla.
It is Piranhaconda.
Ah, it's so good.
Starring.
Piranha, that is a genius. I assumed it was you because it was
Tiffany
so smart.
In this one?
No, but Michael Madsen is.
Wow.
we should also
of his career.
Yeah. We should also note here that Arachnoquake is also a real sci-fi
yes.
movie, which stars Tracy Gold of Growing Pains
nice.
And Edward Furlong, who everyone once thought was going to be a big movie star.
Yeah.
All right, Trey Graham, which of the following is a real TV movie update of an 80s movie? One, Ordinary People, The Next Generation. Two, Endless Love, A New Beginning. Three, Son of Dundee, Chip Off the Old Crock. Or four, Blue Lagoon, The Awakening.
Oh, Blue Lagoon, The Awakening.
You are right. Yes. How did you know that?
He watches it.
He's got a Blue Lagoon, Google alert.
The Blue Lagoon was a formative experience.
The Blue Lagoon is
what I'm saying.
Well, you'll be happy to know then that Christopher Atkins actually has a cameo in this movie. So you'll want to tune in for that. All right. Mike Katziff, the new show School Spirits is about what? One, ghost stories about educational institutions. Two, students attending bartending school. Three, the world of competitive undergraduate cheerleading.
Boy.
Oh, man.
That's a tough one.
I'm going to have to go with, God, it can't be. I was going to say A, but that can't be.
I was thinking A at first. Just when I first heard the name. What do you think, Mike?
It would be.
Yeah.
It is, in fact, The Ghost Stories.
No way.
Produced by Mark Burnett.
Wow. Yeah.
Which of the following Stephen Thompson is not a real show coming up this summer? Craft Wars. Insane Coaster Wars or Wine Wars?
Jeez.
Two of them are real.
No, that's the... I am going to say... See, I want to say Insane Coaster Wars just because it's sort of the least plausible. I'm going to go with Wine Wars.
Wine Wars is the correct answer.
Yes.
It is not real. Craft Wars is a competitive show starring Tori Spelling.
Nice.
Hosted by Tori Spelling. Insane Coaster Wars has a certain number of roller coasters face off each week to see which is the most awesome.
Wow.
And then you vote, I think,
it's
maybe.
It's tricky to do head-to-head.
Yeah.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
These shows are just a graveyard of former
Yeah, Hollywood sure is a dream factory.
Oh, you haven't even got yet.
It's awakening this notion that once you're on TV, you have to be on TV.
Yeah.
Right.
No matter what.
Well, all and right. with like 100 channels if you
yeah.
can't find something.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, Trey Graham, which is a real upcoming reality show about a celebrity marriage? One, Married to Jonas, about the marriage of Jonas' brother, Kevin Jonas. Two, Gavin, You My All, about the engagement of Gavin DeGraw. Free Lady, about the divorce of Lady Antebellum singer Hillary Scott. It Had to Be You, about the engagement of former American Idols Ace Young and Diana DeGarmo.
The extent to which I do not care about any of those people
that's
is making it very, very difficult for me to answer
utterly
this.
Utterly beside the point. Do you care about
I'm going to go with Free Lady.
It is actually Married to Jonas.
Yeah, that would have been my guess.
It is actually Married to... But you have to admit the ones I came up with were pretty good. And I should mention that if they are not a real thing, then the underlying facts are also not true. Gavin DeGraw is not engaged. Hillary Scott is not divorced. But Ace Young and Diana DeGarmo are engaged. That part is true.
Sponsored by what, Justin's? Who
sponsored
that?
By whatever jewelry
Do you think
store.
We could copyright all of these in case we can option any of these?
I feel like
somebody's going
to
be
The one Hollywood exec who might listen to the show is like, yes, these are good
this
ideas.
This is like when I used to sit at press tour in the summer and make up like tweets that were just ideas for fake shows.
Mm-hmm. And
so people would be like, you
them.
Need to write some of these down.
Yeah.
Some of these are shows. Yeah, I had a great one about a lady who owned a cupcake truck. It was called Batch Please. Mike Katzef, which is not a real upcoming summer show? Barter Kings, a show about people who trade things for other things in order to obtain high-value items without spending cash. Redneck Island, a competitive reality show airing on CMT. Shark Attack, which follows the collection agents for a payday loan company as they attempt unorthodox methods of collection, including repossessing a diamond belly ring. World's Worst Tenants, which follows eviction specialists as they kick out bad tenants, including an unlicensed cosmetic surgery clinic. Or Jersey Shore Shark Attack, a Jersey Shore parody in which doppelgangers for the cast are menaced by sharks. Barter Kings, Redneck Island, Shark Attack, World's Worst Tenants, Jersey Shore Shark
And which
Attack.
One is not?
Oh, my God.
Which means...
Say, you gotta pick...
Three of those are real.
Four of those are real.
Oh, sorry.
Four of them are real.
I feel like the Jersey Shore Shark Attack can't exist. There's no way that's...
Is that your answer?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is real. That
what?
Is, yeah, it is entirely
Well, clearly
real.
The belly ring one, that detail made it ring very true.
But so. It's the fake one.
That's the fake... See,
Try
to parse your brain, Holmes. I almost have it.
It's because I wanted to put in the detail from World's Worst Tenants about how they had the unlicensed cosmetic surgery clinic, and I figured I had to put in another one that had a similar detail, or you would immediately know that... You know.
So read that one again.
The one I made up?
Yeah.
Shark Attack, which follows the collection agents for a payday loan company as they attempt unorthodox methods of collection, including repossessing a diamond belly ring. Somebody can make that show. Obviously.
That There's feels so real to me.
Pawn shows and storage shows. Mm-hmm. Well, you all did very well. Fun to be quizzed.
Yeah.
All right. So that brings us to our final segment of every show, What is Making Us Happy This Week? Stephen Thompson, what's making you happy this week?
What is making me happy this week is the ongoing utter domination of the state of Wisconsin.
Wow.
As the latest iteration of this would be our man Donald Driver.
Yes.
Wide receiver for the Green Bay Packers, mm-hmm. winning Dancing with the Stars mm-hmm. the way God himself intended.
Uh-huh, yeah.
This follows a string of victories for the state of Wisconsin, which include the kind of intense couple that won the Amazing Race in the most recent iteration. The Major League Baseball MVP, who it turns out was not using steroids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The 2011 Super Bowl won by the Green Bay Packers, and basically
that's
just,
the whole Super Bowl ago.
But anyway, just one more notch in the old bedpost for the state of Wisconsin. Not the bedpost, in the belt.
Freudian slip. Mm-hmm. Well, that's an excellent answer. Trey Graham, what's making you happy this week?
Well, a couple of things. And, you know, this is sort of falling under the Zaxxon rule, but I'm going to say it anyway. There is an epic hate fest going on the wall of a particular D.C.-based actor who...
The Facebook wall, not like a men's room wall.
Right. Who got her first look at the trailer for Les Mis today, and having sung the part of Fantine in a production, was roundly mocking Anne Hathaway's performance.
What a shock. The theater person thinks the movie person is doing everything wrong.
I know.
I couldn't be more stunned.
I love my people. I really do. And there are like 100 comments on mm-hmm. your, on the back and forth. Mm-hmm. But that is not primarily what's making me happy. Primarily what is making me happy is the announcement this very day that coming soon to a theater that may or may not be near you, although there will be somewhere in the vicinity of 600 of them, is one of those digital broadcasts of a live performance of The Tempest, starring Christopher Plummer from the Stratford Festival
Wonderful.
In Canada. So check that out. We'll put up a link to the website where you can find the listings. Christopher Plummer, as we have discussed on this program, a very, very fine actor.
Newly minted Oscar winner.
Newly minted Oscar winner and well-deserved. And The Tempest.
So that's what's making you happy
so
this week.
So that's what's making me happy.
Very good. Mike Katzef, what's making you happy this week?
I don't know if our NPR audience is familiar with something called Game of Thrones. it's a thing, and people like it. But it was kind of a long weekend, and then I got sick on top of it, so I had a lot of time to catch up on the second season of Game of Thrones. I was a few episodes behind. And this past weekend's episode may be one of the best episodes that they've done, and maybe one of the better big episodes that, like, a TV show, like, most ambitious mm-hmm. a TV show has ever attempted to do. Those familiar with the show and the book series, which I am not. I've not read any of the books.
Read them all.
There's this gigantic battle that's sort of the pinnacle of the second book and this second season. I think this is, like, the second to last episode, but this gigantic battle that everything has been sort of dovetailing to this entire season. And for a show that is sort of known for its universe building and epic sweep and hundreds of characters seemingly that all are sort of, and lots of nudity. But for a show that's sort of known for being big, this show certainly embraced this gigantic battle, but compared to what I've read about this same battle in the book, they actually really downsized the scope. In most episodes, it sort of jumps around between setting to setting and character to character. And this one episode, for the most part, spends all 40, 50 minutes all in this one location, really with like four or five actors that you really care about. It was sort of amazing watching how a show that typically can sort of juggle all these things really became so much focused on characters in this gigantic backdrop of this thing. Plus, you know, there are massive explosions that normally don't happen. We finally get like this big battle. But it was actually just very surprising because A, I didn't really know this was coming. I haven't read the books. And I would actually make the case, and I've sort of made this case to people who have read the books, that I actually prefer watching the show more than I think I would like
reading a book.
Well, reading these books, I think. I've never been a big fantasy fan, and it's always really hard to keep track of who's who. Watching the show sort of helps narrow things down, and I think I would make the case that by them narrowing their scope in a lot of ways compared to what you can do on a written page when you don't actually have a production budget and things like that, actually makes it a more interesting story. So this episode, Blackwater, that just aired, it was actually just a really excellent hour of television. You don't have to read the books to understand. I could care less about the books, to be honest.
So, wonderful. Game of Thrones is making my case.
Go figure.
I actually felt the same way about the most recent episode of The Bachelorette, which is just as good and twice as long, thereby being twice as awesome.
Excellent.
That second book of theirs was really bad.
Yeah, when you read The Bachelorette, it's just not
the book
same.
Of Emily and Ari.
It's really just not the same. Okay, sometimes I like it when I am persuaded to like something that I am not inclined to like at all. I do not believe very much in stunt marriage proposals. I generally think that they are not...
Deplorable is the word you're looking for?
Well, I think that they are not really for the people involved. I think that they come off like you care more about other people paying attention to you than you do about the nature of your proposal. So generally...
They also put undue pressure on the person being proposed to.
Absolutely.
In a very unfair way.
Correct. Absolutely true. Nevertheless, came a video this past week, which many of you listening to this podcast have already watched, in which a woman's boyfriend created basically a live lip dub for her, in which he basically got her sitting on the back of the car, then drove the car slowly forward. And as in any good lip dub, people came in and out of the picture singing along to Bruno Mars' I Want to Marry You, which sounds, believe
terrible.
Me.
Sounds terrible.
You're not.
Okay.
You have to watch it.
Okay.
They brought in everybody, like the grandparents are there and like the friends are there and they're dancing. And it's theater people. It turns out this
turns
is
out
a bunch
theater
of theater people.
Go figure.
Aunt Stephen's like, boy, now I'm really out. It seems like...
I just think it should only end with her saying no.
But here's what they did that I think is the key to part of why it's so great, is there's a reverse angle they got so that when you see the video, you see from her perspective the lip dub, but they also have a camera so you can see her face.
Yeah.
And when you watch it, she's so consumed with being delighted. She actually makes, at one point, you know how babies, when they're excited, ball up their fists and just kind of shake
that.
shake their hands in the air.
I do that during Wipeout.
With excitement. She does that during this proposal. And there's also a point where she becomes so excited, she just starts slapping her knees.
Aww.
She's so happy and it's so great. And there's an awesome little moment where... I'm totally spoiling the video, but they bring in a bunch of little laptops because of the people.
There's no spoiler.
There is. There's these little gimmicks in it because they bring in these, for the people who can't be there, they bring in a line of laptops. So you're looking at all of them on video, dancing and singing. And Stephen is making this face like he hates this so bad.
I was totally of this mind.
Me too.
Very
I skipped,
philosophically opposed
I skipped
to...
the first three times that this is linked to.
Yeah.
I skipped. Okay. I challenge you to watch it. It's not just, hey, I watched this video and this video made me happy. It's having my head sort of turned around on something that I am also philosophically opposed to because it's so joyful and wonderful.
Okay.
And it won me over and changing my mind, that was what made me happy this week. You know, sometimes when these things go viral, I have a conflicted relationship with the internet at times. You know, I'm talking about Mad Men. But this was a lovely, lovely surprise, and I encourage you all to watch it. And obviously, we'll link to it, which is actually true now. If you have not been checking out the blog recently, we have been trying a lot harder to provide all the links and the stuff for you to look at after the show.
So before lies, now.
Right, exactly. Before it sort of meant we'll try to remember.
88 times we were lying.
But now it's actually like we really are doing that a little bit more, by which I mean I'm doing it a little bit more. And so we'll provide the video. And if you haven't been doing that, then I encourage you to come to the blog at npr.org/PCHH and check out the links and all the supplementary material that we like to provide.
All right, goodness.
And that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me and the blog at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen, STEPHEN. You can follow Trey at Trey Graham, Trey with an E, Graham like the cracker.
Like the cracker.
You can follow our esteemed producer, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, KATZIF. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music that you are tapping your foot to right now. And of course, you should follow Glenn Weldon, who we miss and who we will hope to be with again soon, at GH Weldon, WELDON. Thanks to all of you guys for being here.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming, Mike. We are always happy to have you with us.
Thank you.
And thanks to all of you for listening, and we will see you next week.